Hey, everybody. Welcome to Profoundly Pointless. My name is Nick. Coming up in this episode, we're going to juggle all over the world and then count down the top five times of the day.
My goal is like, I'm just going to try. Like, it doesn't matter what I do. I don't have to succeed at it on video. I don't have to be great. I just have to post something just to get me out of bed and feel like, you know, honestly, feel like I don't have to hate myself today. Like, that was the mentality. You know, I've taught a lot of people to juggle, and I see people get in their own way about it all the time. Like, they just have decided that they can't do it, so they don't even try. Hobby that some people associate with, like, being geeky or nerdy or clowns or whatever, but it can end up being really lucrative and really fun and really fulfilling, and you get to see the world, and it's great.
I want to thank you guys so much for joining us. If you get a chance, like, download, subscribe, share. We really appreciate it. It really helps us out. Our first guest has this amazing inspirational story because it starts out with juggling. And there is so much that goes into juggling and being a professional juggler that I had just no idea about. But beyond that, what I think is so inspirational about it is she's somebody that's been struggling with depression and just said, I need to do something. I need to create something. And it has turned into this remarkable community. This is Taylor Glenn from Taylor Tries. What was the first thing that you ever juggled?
Ooh, the first thing I ever juggled, baseballs, actually. I taught myself how to juggle three baseballs while playing baseball when I was about 10 or 11, I think.
Was it just you were bored, kind of waiting for your next turn at bat, or how did it happen?
Exactly. Yeah, I was just, I think it was maybe a practice, and I thought that the people going ahead of me were boring and taking too long, and so I picked up three, and I just kind of figured it out for a half hour and eventually was able to do it. I don't even remember if I had seen somebody else do it or where I even understood the concept of juggling, but that's my memory of actually figuring it out, was just boredom.
I feel like everybody has basically tried to do juggling at one point. Why did you succeed while other people fail?
That's a great question. I think for me, one of the things that a trait that I have as a person is that I just am very motivated. I'll do something until I can figure it out. And even today, you know, I've taught a lot of people to juggle, and I see people get in their own way about it all the time. Like, they just have decided that they can't do it, so they don't even try. Or they'll try for 5 minutes, and then they'll get frustrated and get bored or something. But the people that succeed at it, it has nothing to do with talent or coordination or anything like that. It's just a matter of whether they were able to get past that little frustration of, oh, I dropped and messed up. At some point, you just have to get past that. And if you can, then you can learn how to juggle. Like, everyone who does is able to learn. It's not as hard as people think it is.
But you have to be pretty coordinated, though, right?
No, not at all. This is a total misconception. I personally think that coordination is developed, not something that you're necessarily born with. I think people develop it very young, and certain people are more coordinated. Absolutely. I'm a very coordinated person. But I think that's because I juggle, not... I don't juggle because I'm coordinated. Having coordination, playing other sports is going to help you if you want to learn how to juggle. But I would say anyone can learn. I've taught, like, you know, 85-year-old grandmas how to juggle. I've taught people who are nearly blind how to juggle, like, who are, like, legally blind or who have no depth perception. Like, there's really no excuse. It's not about your coordination. It's about your determination.
That makes kind of sense. It does look like one of those things that, okay, if I just did this enough times, I would eventually be able to do it.
Yeah, I think that's true for most things, honestly.
Yeah, I would agree with you there. Some sports / athletic activities, like, look, it doesn't matter how many times I do this, I'm not going to be a professional gymnast, though.
Well, and there's a difference between being able to do something and being a professional at it. Like, I don't think most people can become a professional juggler. I think at some point you're like, you're too old, or you're not, you know, you don't have the time and the energy to put into it. I don't think I'm good enough to be a quote unquote professional in the sense of like doing it for my job or like doing it at an Olympic level or something. Not that there's an Olympic juggling team, but
I was about to ask you, it's like, wait a minute, when did juggling get into the Olympics?
They've been trying for a while, but there is like, there are professional competitions, right? And I'm not a good enough technical juggler to be in those, although I would consider myself a professional compared to most people. Yeah.
That makes sense. Now, okay, so technically, what do you mean you're not technically good enough? Like, you don't do the right spins, or what do you mean by that?
in the sense of, you know, there are the elite in the world, right? The top, if there was an Olympic competition for juggling, there would be like the top 10 jugglers that would compete in it. I'm not one of those people, but I would be somebody who could, like, you know, compete in like maybe the American one or the California one. Like, I'm good enough to do it professionally if there was a competition market for that, but I would not be considered one of the best in the world who could actually hold their own in like a competition with the best by any means.
You seem to be the most famous juggler, though, or at least social media famous.
Why, thanks. Yeah, well, that's the funny thing is, like, the popularity-wise, I am one of the most popular. I'm actually probably the second, like, most popular social media juggler. There's another juggler named Josh Horton who, he's not really known for juggling, though. He's a trick shooter basketball person, but he does juggle, and he is, like, a very good juggler. And he has far more social media presence than I do. But he's been doing it a long time. But in terms of actual juggling, like somebody who's out there just being a juggler, yeah, I guess you could say that I'm one of the main ones, if not the top one.
Does that bother other people who would be like in the top 10 technical jugglers? Does that cause any strife at the, or anything like that where like, yeah, but she's just social media famous? I mean, is there anything like that?
I think with any subgroup, there's always drama for sure. I encountered it more when I first started kind of gaining steam on social media. I encountered a few people who would get a little high and mighty about how I wasn't posting very hard tricks, or I wasn't representing like the best juggling out there. But that was also kind of my intention. I don't want to show people like the hardest things because I don't want people to feel like they can't do it. I want to make it accessible because I do think anyone can learn how to juggle. And as great as it is to see somebody do, you know, 9 balls with complicated patterns, I don't think anyone who's like learning needs to see that. I think it can be either inspiring for you or it can be really detrimental and make you afraid of juggling. So for me, I've always taken the approach of showing very accessible tricks that I think normal people can do. And so I took that approach very early on, and I definitely got some backlash from the community for it. Like, people thought I was overrated or I wasn't worth the amount of attention I was getting or whatever. But for the most part, I would say the community is very supportive, and they're just happy that jugglers are being seen and, you know, not made fun of and stuff.
That makes sense to me in the sense that as a lay person watching it, I'm not any more impressed by 9 balls than I am by 6. Like,
yeah, like, exactly. At some point, you just don't even know what's happening. You're like, oh, there's a lot of stuff in the air. Cool. You know, jugglers get really nerdy about it. And they're like, oh, that's a cool pattern and a sight swap and all this stuff. Non-jugglers are like, yeah, she's doing maybe 7, maybe 8, 12, you know.
Yeah, once it passes 4, I really can't count.
Yeah, exactly.
That's more than 4. I know that. That's for sure. So,
and it's so much harder, but nobody really cares if you're not a juggler.
Nobody. Isn't that the way of the world? This is much more difficult, but no one cares.
Yep. Juggler's life. Yep.
So how did you kind of progress down this path necessarily?
For me, it was being exposed to other jugglers. You know, I think this is a really important part of any sort of hobby and getting interested in things. It's changing a little bit with the internet, but when I was younger, I learned 3 balls and then I kind of felt all accomplished and was like, sweet, I did it. I don't have to do anything else. I didn't know there was more to it. I didn't know you could do 4 balls or 5 balls or even 3 ball tricks. And then at some point there was a family friend who actually did yo-yo and he also could juggle. And he kind of showed me, hey, look, there's a lot of cool tricks you can do. And it opened up my world. And I started going to the internet and like at the time there was no YouTube, but I was looking up, you know, blog posts and stuff of tricks to do and watching little MP4 videos, and eventually YouTube helped with being exposed to other jugglers that way. And then I started going to juggling events and competitions and festivals and conventions, and that's when it really like took off, because being exposed to other people who are way better than you will just make you infinitely better.
Were you surprised at the social media success?
Oh, over the last couple years? Yeah. I started posting like 2 years ago, and I was definitely surprised at how quickly it started gaining traction. I mean, 2 years might seem like a long time for some people, but for me, it was like I was just doing this thing that I liked, and I actually just had a goal for myself that I wanted to post every day something on Instagram, and that always just ended up being juggling, and people just really responded to it. I was surprised in the sense that I didn't know that juggling could reach that many people and like speak to that many people, because I don't think all of them juggle. I think a lot of the followers that follow me just like watching it, which is surprising. So yeah, but I also understand that it's a cool looking thing. Like, I'm glad that people like it, and that doesn't surprise me because it's really cool. It's fun to watch.
Yeah, I'm always impressed. I'm like, oh, that's impressive.
Yeah.
Is there a big difference between juggling like baseballs and juggling bowling pins? Or, I mean, is it the same concept, or is it like, hey, you can juggle this, but you can't juggle this?
Kind of. Baseballs and bowling pins are not exactly what we juggle, but they're definitely related. In juggling, we have three basic props, right? There are juggling balls, which vary in what kind of weight they are and what kind they are. There's juggling clubs, which are the bowling pin looking things. And then there are juggling rings. Those are like the typical three props that we use. And they're all very different, for sure. Like, usually you start with balls. They're the easiest because there's no spin aspect. Then you go to rings. They're a little bit harder because they're just shaped weird and you have to catch them a certain way. And then clubs are the final piece, and they're definitely harder because there's a spin aspect. There's a weight distribution aspect. But overall, once you learn the basic pattern, I don't think that they're too hard to go from thing to thing. For example, five balls is a lot easier than five clubs.
Oh, really? Okay, mm-hmm. So to help me understand this, so on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 is the easiest, 10 is the hardest. Juggling five balls would be what on that scale? Juggling five clubs would be what on that scale?
Ooh. That's hard, because juggling isn't, there's not like a limit, right? It's very hard to see the end, because right now, I mean, we're always pushing that limit every year. People are being able to juggle more and more objects. I would say, like, personally, for example, of like the hardest things I can do versus the easiest things, I'd say juggling five balls is maybe 4 or 5. Like, it's advanced, but not the hardest advanced thing. But it did take a couple of years for me to learn, and I think it usually does. But five clubs, I've been working on five clubs for like 6 years, and I still just don't have it solid. So I would say five clubs is like an 8 or 9. But I don't know if everyone would say that. That's just me.
Have you ever been injured doing it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I have a scar on my lip, actually. But it was from juggling rings, because rings are very thin plastic pieces of plastic. They're thin. They tend to kind of have rough edges. I don't know why, but they're designed that way. And if you throw them up really high and they come down, they're coming down really fast. So I tried to do a trick that I wasn't ready for. I was juggling five rings, and the goal was to throw all three of them up, spin around really fast, and then go back into juggling five rings. I was not capable of doing this trick, but I wanted to try it anyway. I got cocky and I threw the three up. I spun around, and one of them just came right down on my lip, hit me square in the middle of my face. And I actually woke up like I had passed out. It hit me so hard with my lip cut open and blood everywhere. That's the dumbest, stupidest injury that I've ever gotten.
It knocked you, it knocked yeah. you out?
Yeah, probably only for a couple seconds. But I remember getting hit, and then all of a sudden I was on the floor and I woke up with a lot of blood on me. Yeah, it definitely knocked me out. But the typical injury is like broken fingernails and, you know, your hands get banged up a little bit, but nothing too bad.
So now, is this the full-time job? Can you make a living off of it?
A lot of people make a living juggling, yeah. It's actually a really great job for a lot of people. Usually you're performing for corporate events, or a lot of people have been doing like sporting events. It's not always, and it's not typically like a birthday party and stuff. That's what people think of. They think of clowns. That's a totally different type of job. There's jugglers and there's clowns. Sometimes they'll do both, but for the most part, jugglers do more like parties and events for like adults. And clowns are doing clowning. So you can make good money. I know a lot of friends that do it and love it, and they make a great living doing it. I don't do it professionally in that sense. I do it on social media and I do make money that way, but I don't perform as a juggler for my full-time job.
Okay. But you don't do it for free all the time necessarily either, right?
Yeah. I typically, when I do perform, I'm usually performing at juggling festivals. They will either pay me or pay my way to go as a special guest, and I'll teach and I'll perform, and I get to see the world that way. It's really fun.
Yeah. I mean, we had a couple of podcast episodes ago, and by a couple, I probably mean 10 or 20. We had a guy who's a professional yo-yoer, and he would always say, yeah, he's like, yeah, my friends kind of give me a hard time, but then I get to go to Japan for free, and who's laughing
That's
now?
Awesome. I might know him. I mean, the yo-yo community and the juggling community are similar, so sometimes there's a crossover, but yeah, it's very similar in that sense. Like, you know, it's this kind of weird hobby that some people associate with like being geeky or nerdy or clowns or whatever, but it can end up being really lucrative and really fun and really fulfilling, and you get to see the world, and it's great. I'm going to Australia in a couple months for it, and that's, I would never be able to do that without juggling. Like, I just wouldn't have the money and all that.
When you say really lucrative, are we talking like millions, or are we talking hundreds of thousands? I mean, like,
I would say no, definitely not. I don't know any jugglers that are making like millions, but there are some really successful jugglers who have made it work, particularly doing motivational type speaking and incorporating juggling that way, or doing corporate events and team building and things like that. That's probably the most successful route that I've seen.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Not mansions, but you're not eating ramen noodles either necessarily.
Yeah, I mean, they make really good money, like, but it's not, they're not Bill Gates, you know?
Yeah. But, okay, how come, why don't you want to, how come you're not doing that, I guess? Is it just, you haven't been established enough, or it's just you want to, it's too short term, or what's the reason not to kind of push it all the way? Because you certainly seem to have the fame necessarily.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think it's, different people get into juggling for different reasons. And for me, juggling has never been a performing type thing. It's always been something that I did. I treated it like a sport. I really love the mental exercise of it, the physical exercise. Like, it's physically, it feels like you're working out, you know, you're doing a lot of bicep, it's cardio. And I love just going into a gym and putting on my headphones and juggling for 2 hours and like sweating and doing that. Some people really like the social aspect of it. Some people really like performing and like, you know, being watched and being on. I am not somebody who tends to be really good at being in front of a crowd and performing. I'm good in video, but that's been learned over 10 years. I'm actually really shy, and I have a really hard time like getting on a stage in front of people. So the idea of doing that as my job freaks me out. I would like to eventually incorporate some of that into my life from my social media stuff, but it's not the thing that has been pushing me this whole time. It's not my dream. So that's why I haven't done it.
Hardest thing to juggle.
The hardest thing to juggle besides life. Life is really hard. I would say like the hardest physical thing. If you're asking of the typical juggling props, like balls, clubs, etc., like clubs are the hardest. I mentioned that. But if you're asking just like of random things, I would say for me personally, it's difficult to juggle things of different weights. It's not necessarily the things themselves. It's just like you might see a performer juggle a bowling ball, an egg and a scarf or something. That's really difficult because your brain is having to input three different weights and keep track of where they are. Because if you try to throw an egg with the same force that you throw a bowling ball, that thing is going to go flying. And if you try to throw a bowling ball with no force, you're going to break your arm. So that's really difficult. I've had a hard time doing that. If I'm juggling like something really heavy and something really light, it really messes with your brain. I find it really hard.
How many Guinness Book of World Records do you have?
I only have one. Huh. I mean, I say only one. I'm
oh, well, then never mind. Nearly one.
Yep. I made it in the book and everything. It's pretty exciting.
What do they do? Do they just, did somebody show up or how do you get in the book?
You can get into the book yourself by, or I think in the book. I'm not sure about the difference between the book versus like just getting a world record, but I know you can get a world record by submitting online, applying. You have to follow all their rules. It's kind of complicated. I got in by going to a specific event that they were at and presenting them with, like, this is what I want to do, and I want to break this record, and then we did it. So I think mine was a little easier, actually, than having to do it on your own.
What was your,
'cause they were there.
What's your record?
My record is, see if I can remember the exact title. It's kind of embarrassing. I think it's the most juggling tricks in 1 minute with three balls is the official title.
But that sounds like, it doesn't sound like a, like one, you know how sometimes they have most times someone hopped on one leg in the state of Michigan on a Tuesday. I mean, it doesn't sound like one of those. That sounds like a legitimate kind of, oh, that sounds actually pretty hard.
It does, huh? Yeah. It sounds impressive to me too. I set the record, so I didn't have to beat anyone else's record, but I did find it really difficult. The hardest part about it was that, A, you had to come up with a lot of tricks, but as a juggler, you know, I know a lot of tricks. I was prepared in that sense. But they had some rules about I had to say each trick as I did it, and that was actually the hardest because, like, speaking while you're juggling is a whole other skill in and of itself, and doing it under pressure and a time limit was really difficult. So every time I did a trick, I'd have to say, you know, half shower, tennis, like under the leg. Like, and I ended up getting, how many did I get? 39 tricks.
Best movie about a juggler.
About a juggler.
Is there any movies about jugglers?
I don't think there's any movies about a juggler. Not that I've seen. Maybe like made by a juggler, but no legit movie. There are a lot of movies with juggling in them. My favorite is The Jerk with Steve Martin.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Cat juggling. He's great.
Is there a worst movie with juggling in it? Like, is there a movie that jugglers hate?
Oh, no. I would say, like, the biggest pet peeve maybe that I have heard of or jugglers really hate when in cartoons there's juggling and they tend to show juggling is this, like, they'll be juggling seven balls or something, but they'll be doing it in this big circle, which is a juggling pattern, but they never make it look like the actual pattern, and it just looks impossible. I mean, it's really hard to do that pattern, and let alone with seven balls. So it's just annoying because then what it does is it teaches, like, kids and all these people that this is what juggling looks like, and it doesn't look at all like that. That's a totally ridiculous pattern. Nobody does that. So I hear that complaint a lot, like cartoons kind of mess us up.
They ruin that people's expectations necessarily.
Exactly, because every time you go to teach somebody how to juggle three balls, they do this thing where they throw one up and then they pass it to the other hand, and that's called a shower. It's very difficult. It's not what you should learn when you learn how to juggle, and so jugglers hate it when shows or cartoons or whatever show it that way. It's really annoying.
That's how I thought you did it.
Nah, no. The typical juggling pattern is, I mean, you can do it that way. It's not wrong, but it's much harder. It's something you learn maybe like 6 months in. It's not something you learn right at the beginning. The typical pattern is called a cascade, which is where each throw is going up in like a crossing way. So, yeah, it's not going in a circle where you're passing it from hand to hand. That's a different pattern.
I always thought that's how you did it. That's how I always tried to. Like, I threw it from one hand to the other and then threw it up.
Yeah, that's probably why you never learned three, because it's harder.
Now I know
unless
the whole,
you did.
Now I know the whole secret. I knew where I, now I know where I've gone wrong in life.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's just hard when you don't have like a teacher, right?
Yeah.
But, and some people do teach themselves that way first. Like there are like one out of 2000 people who are like, oh, I learned this way and they can do it. But it's just so much harder that usually people can't get it. It's just fast and difficult. So the typical pattern is the cascade. You throw the right hand up, then you throw the left hand up, then you throw the right hand up, then the left hand. That's it. It's very simple.
Best joke about juggling.
Best joke about juggling.
Is there like a joke that other jugglers tell each other?
There's like a meme page online where jugglers will do juggling memes now. But there's a joke that jugglers always hear that I think we all hate. And that's the one that says, how do you kill a clown? You go for the juggler.
That's kind of
like the jugular vein. Jugglers hate that joke because we hear it constantly. It's annoying.
Yeah.
It's just like, ah.
It is kind of good, though.
It's good. It's clever, but we've heard it 1,000 times. But typically, you know, instead, we don't. I think our jokes revolve around inside jokes of funny things about, you know, famous jugglers and stuff.
What are, like, who's the most famous juggler?
The most famous juggler, like to non-jugglers or to jugglers?
Yeah, like who would be the, like, if you're going to pattern a career, you want to be like this person.
Well, the best juggler historically, like in the world, in the universe, in existence, was Anthony Gatto. He's still alive. He doesn't juggle anymore, but he just hands down was the best. Nobody can touch him. He started juggling when he was like 4, and he's technically just able to do things that nobody else can touch. The second best is a juggler named Wes Peden. He's still juggling. He's amazing. He's very creative, very artistic. It's great. And those two are in a league of their own. Like, it's hard to even get close to them.
Best way that juggling has transitioned, that's helped you in real life.
That's hard. There's two big things that come to mind. I'm going to cheat and probably answer it twice. The first one is, for me, juggling really does improve your coordination. And because it's like throwing and catching, those are two very important things to other skills. As a result of getting really good at that, I'm really good at a lot of other things. It's kind of in the same sense that, like, you know, somebody who can hit a baseball is probably pretty good at also maybe hitting a tennis ball. Juggling is so relatable to so many other activities that usually when I pick up other activities, people are like, wow, you're so amazing and you learn so quickly. I think it's just because juggling is a really good thing to learn if you want to get good at anything. I think it's helped me, my coordination and my reaction time and all that stuff. So realistically, I think anyone who does sports or wants to like get good at coordination-based things should learn how to juggle, because it really improves everything. And then the biggest thing for me personally, though, that it's helped me with is that in high school, I had really low self-esteem and I was really shy and I had a hard time like talking to people. When I started going to juggling events, it sort of forced me out of that shyness, and it taught me, like, it made me feel like I had a community and it made me feel like I belonged, because it was typically, a lot of jugglers tend to be like antisocial or like socially awkward, kind of weird kids. And it really was great to find a group of people that understood me and kind of had that same mentality and those same habits. And I think it taught me how to connect with people and how to speak with people. And I don't think I would be where I am now in terms of my career or social media or any of that if I didn't have like such a safe environment to develop those social skills in.
That's really all the questions I got. What's coming up next for you?
I mean, we've been talking about my Instagram and my social media. If anyone wanted to go check it out, that would be fun. I love sharing my juggling if you want to check it out. My Instagram is @Taylor_tries, and I try new things and I, you know, try to teach other people things. So go check that out. It's fun. It's silly. It's awkward. It's cute.
I like how you throw in the awkward. It's awkward. It's fun. But
I'm very awkward. I embrace it.
How did you kind of come up with the whole Taylor Tries thing? Was that just a natural evolution of it, or did you?
No, not really. I got really depressed. I was struggling with depression for a while. I mean, I still have a hard time with it. It's ongoing, but like a couple years ago, I was really at a low, and I was having a hard time just getting anything done or getting out of bed. And so I knew what I loved. It was like juggling, and I loved making videos and stuff. So I made a promise to myself that I was going to try to make something every day and like post it online, whether it was 5 seconds or a minute. And my goal was like, I'm just going to try. Like, it doesn't matter what I do. I don't have to succeed at it on video. I don't have to be great. I just have to post something. It's just got to be me doing something just to get me out of bed and feel like, you know, honestly, feel like I don't have to hate myself today. Like, that's was the mentality. And so I did, you know, I posted every day for a year and a half. And what I found was it really helped me psychologically. Like, it made me realize that, like, I can make progress every day, even if it's just with 10 seconds. You know, getting out of bed is worth it. So, yeah, that's how Taylor Tries came up. It was just try something today.
Oh, I think that's a fantastic message for people, by the way. You know?
Yeah, I do too. Yeah. I really want to start talking more about that, honestly. Like, if I do end up doing any sort of juggling performance, it will probably incorporate that, because I think it's really important. And I know a lot of people struggle with it. And I know I still struggle with it. It's hard. Mental health is hard.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, I think the old kind of stigma about it is like, well, it's just in your head. Yeah, but that's the worst place it could be. You know?
That's I mean, it's all in our head, right? Yeah. Like, everything we're experiencing is just inputted information in our brains.
I want to thank Taylor so much for joining us. If you want to connect with her, we have linked to her on our social media accounts. We're Profoundly Pointless on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We have also included her information in the RSS feed that's on this podcast. You got to check out her Instagram. You can see a lot of these videos, and I think that you can instantly see, I think, why her story has resonated with so many people. And it's really cool to watch the juggling. Okay. Now let's go ahead and give John Shull a call, who may have a big announcement.
Hello.
Well, man, don't delay. Tell us what you got.
What do you want? You tell me what you need. I got what you need.
I want to know what kind of car you bought.
it's a lease, and I had a Terrain, and I went one, I guess it's a minor step above, but it's really just because I need the more seats. Because for some godforsaken reason, I can create children, but I went with an Acadia.
Wow, that is incredibly boring.
I needed the space, and I needed something that was reasonable. It's not necessarily what I wanted.
Did you haggle?
Haggle. I'm not entirely... What do you mean?
So obviously you didn't haggle. You just went in there and paid whatever price that they had on the sticker, or did you go in there and try to negotiate?
Oh, no. This is my fourth dealership.
Because of bad credit or because of something else?
could have been because of bad credit, but...
okay.
No, in all seriousness, it's just... I kind of knew a vehicle I wanted, and... I mean, listen, salesmen have to do what they have to do, but I like to think, believe it or not, I kind of know when I'm being taken around. And I will give the dealership that I went with a lot of credit, because the salesperson I got was like, listen, I'm not going to pressure you. I don't even care if you get a car, to be honest. I just want you to be happy.
That's a bold-faced lie right there. I would have turned around and walked away, because that person's lie. He doesn't give a shit if you're happy or not. You think that person's never talking to you again? He suckered you in. You probably paid at least $2,000 more for that car than you should have, because you were like, "Oh, this guy's a nice guy."
Well, it's a lease, first off, so it's just a monthly payment, and you know, it's fine. It's.
You know what? I don't have any other questions to ask you. I'm a little bit.
I have a question for you, actually.
Okay.
Did you do something? Today's Monday. Did you do something today, wardrobe-wise, that you didn't realize?
I did.
Do you want to care to tell in case people don't follow you on social media, do you want to fill everybody in?
So basically what the story is yesterday I washed something, my coat that I wear to work and that I wear on the bus. Public shout out to public transportation in Seattle. It's great. And I washed it along with my wife's stuff, and I didn't realize that her underwear, a pair of her black panties, got stuck to the hood of my jacket and was dangling down the entire day. I just thought people were maybe checking me out because I've been lifting, but apparently that's not the reason. So basically, I spent 7 to 8 hours at work and in downtown Seattle parading around with my wife's underwear hanging off my hood.
So there's two things that immediately, like, just glare out to me that I have to bring up. One, I'm proud of you and surprised that you do your own laundry.
I'm actually pretty good at it. I've done it for a long time. I'm an independent man.
Well, that's to be determined. And two, like, was there at any point where you were like, did you notice it at all? And you're just like, oh, this must
yeah,
be
yeah, I noticed it. I noticed it, and then I just said, fuck it. I'm just going to walk around with my wife's underwear hanging off my head. No, dude, of course I didn't notice it.
Well.
That raises a really interesting question as to how much people dislike me that no one would have pointed this out.
If somebody doesn't know you, you know, I mean, even at your work, well, that's not true. I would think your coworkers would have been like, hey, you have a pair of panties stuck to your jacket.
Who do you think that people would just look at and dislike more, me or you?
You, for sure.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think just by the general look of me, people would dislike me more than you.
You kind of look like an asshole at first glance.
I could see that. I could see that. I kind of have that general kind of don't talk to me, I'm a dickhead look.
Like Napoleon syndrome kind of thing?
We've gone over this.
I know. He was 5'7", which back then was actually considered tall or something.
And he's actually 5'6" back then. French units, shout out to France, baby.
All six listeners, yeah, yeah.
Parlez-vous. I don't know what that means, but I think I have no idea. Listen, are you ready for your segment? Social media shout out?
Sure, let's do it. Let's cue the band. Am I getting a band yet, or is that still in the budget? Like, to work it out?
No.
Anyways, appreciate y'all following us, liking, commenting, hating on Nick, whatever you're going to do. So let's start with Vaughn Anthony Rufat. Sure, I completely ruined that, I think.
Wait, that's his whole name?
Yeah, it's an Instagram follower of ours.
That's a good name. He must be important.
I'm sure I butchered it, but I'll say it again. Rufat. Crystal, Sarah, Sheila, Maggie, Kathy, Joel, David, and Jay Klein. So,
would you take that as a compliment if someone said you were an ugly Brad Pitt?
I don't think so. Well, that's a great question.
What if they said uglier? Like, you're an uglier Brad Pitt.
I'd be like, how ugly? And then I think if you put it on a scale from 1 to 10, if you're anything over, like, half, like, even a 4.5, like, if they say, well, you're like a 4.5 Brad Pitt, I'd say, nope, I need to be a 5 or above.
Yeah, I could agree with that. Yeah, I feel like an ugly Brad Pitt would be an insult, an uglier Brad Pitt would be like, oh, okay, well, looking good today, I guess.
I mean, if somebody came up to me and was like, hey, you know, you're all right looking, you're kind of like a larger version of Leonardo DiCaprio, I'd be like, all right, well, I'll take that, that's a compliment. Then if someone came up to me and was like, hey, you kind of look like Chevy Chase, but not the 1980s Chevy Chase.
For people who have never seen John, all you have to know, it's Samwell Tarly from Game of Thrones.
Well, yes, the top half for sure, but, you know, I still do my calf raises every morning, so.
You don't think he's got good calves? Let's see if I can find a picture of that guy's calves.
Oh, my God.
Okay, you go on to your thing. I'm going to find a picture of whoever that guy is calves.
All right, so your first question is when you're cleaning up around the house, what do you hate more to pick up or clean? Dog hair or dust?
Oh, dog hair, man. I fucking hate dog hair. It's impossible. Like, you get a good vacuum. That should be the sole measurement of a good vacuum is dog hair, specifically off a carpet.
Yeah, I can't stand dog hair. And we, Last year we adopted this great Pyrenees, and he just, I swear, he like sheds out a blanket every week. It's insane. All right, moving on. I think this one will be a little tougher for you. You have to pick one and spend at least 3 hours there. A honky-tonk bar dressed up as a cowboy, or a gothic rave where you're dressed as a gothic person.
Ooh. Oh, I think probably the honky-tonk, right? Because at least the honky-tonk, you could kind of just do it ironically after a while. And the point of this question being, this is kind of neither of John's personalities. If this is your personality and your thing, then obviously, you know, do you. But it's not necessarily where I would be hanging out. Like, I'd go to a goth rave for a solid hour, but I don't think I would be dressed like that. Like, it just takes too much work.
Have you ever been to a rave? I'm sure, we might have stumbled into one by accident.
Yeah, dude, I've done meth. Or wait, no, not meth.
I want to edit that part out. Yeah, I've done meth. I mean,
yeah.
Crystal meth, is that different than meth?
Yeah, I've done. I've had a beer before. I mean, that's what I meant to say. The inconsequentially, the actor who plays Samwell Tarly is John Bradley. I cannot find a picture of his calves.
Probably because they don't. It doesn't exist, and for good reason.
Well, nobody's taking a good calf shot. So if anybody can get a good calf shot of John Bradley, I'd appreciate that. And to compare.
All of our Game of Thrones actors and actresses who listen to the show.
We actually do have a couple, by the way.
Shout out to Sophie Turner.
Yep. Wait, which? Right, no, she doesn't listen. Well, who knows? Maybe she does.
You have to eat one of these. Expired bread or expired yogurt?
Oh, come on, dude. Expired bread. That's easy. I don't want to fuck around with yogurt, man. You mess around with old dairy, that's just not a good day.
I may or may not have eaten a yogurt that was dated for like near Christmas time, like less than 5 days ago.
That's not bad, though. I thought you were going to say like Christmas of last year.
No, I think at that point it would just be one clump of curdled milk.
Are you ready for our top five?
Let's do it. Favorite times of the day, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I still can't find a picture of John Bradley's calves. I really would have thought I would have been able to find. Nobody's taking a picture of his legs. How is this even possible?
I don't think it's that common. I think there's a lot of actors and actresses that you would try to find a picture of their calves, and you wouldn't be able to find it.
Okay, name me an actor, not super famous, and I'll see if I can find a picture of their calves right now.
Tim Allen.
Ooh, good one. Nice. See if we can find a picture of Tim Allen's calves.
Such an awkward... By the way, this is the calf episode presented to you by Profoundly Pointless.
Ray Allen's calves come up. Ray Allen has fantastic calves.
Yeah, but he was a basketball player forever. Of course he's going to have...
Yeah, but usually tall calves. Guys don't have great calves.
I think he's like 6'6" is still pretty tall.
Quite tall. There's unusual amount of pictures of Ray Allen's calves. Shout out to Ray Allen for some good calves. Tim Allen, man, hit the gym. Also, no pictures of Tim Allen's calves. Okay, we should probably move on from this whole discussion.
You might just want to close the laptop and let's just focus on the top
five. Yeah, let's just move on. So our top five, like John already said, potentially I wasn't listening, is top five times of the day. And I didn't go generic times. I went specific, like 30-minute increments. What did you do?
Oh, wow. I just went like times of day, like generic.
Okay, well, that's not what we're doing.
You said times of day.
Yeah, time. Specify
any specific time. You just said time of the day.
Okay, how would I specify the difference between a time of the day and a time of the day?
You could have said, like, exact times.
But I'm not exact times. It would be, like, 1202, 1203.
It's fine. I can still make my list work with what I had put down.
Okay, well, then I'm going to put you on the spot real quick. Let's hear your number five.
All right, so my number five will be 8 o'clock at night.
Okay, so 8 p.m. All right. That's
8 p.m. Because in the summer, usually that's when the sun's starting to go down. And it's just awesome. You know, it's just a good time. 8 o'clock is like a good solid time to either like get ready to start, you know, shutting down the night or sometimes you're just picking it up.
See, that's why I actually had that around that time as my number four. Now, I put that at 8:30 p.m. I feel okay. like 8:30 p.m. is actually a better time than 8 because it's either a nice sunset late in the summer or that's when you really start to get going. Like, all right, we're going out. 8 o'clock, you're probably still watching TV. 8:30, you're hitting – you're starting to seriously pre-drink. Like, you might have your pants on for the night.
like some chicken wing shots almost.
Exactly, baby. Best shot in the world besides Grand Marnier. My number five is 12 p.m. I'm a fan of the lunch hour.
Yeah, see, I don't have that on, actually. You'll notice with most of my times, there isn't a whole lot in the middle of the day.
Yeah, I agree with that, because you're at work, it's kind of miserable. That's really my only one that's the middle of the – that's really my only middle of the day time is 12 p.m. What's your number four?
I have morning, specifically like 6 a.m.-ish.
Wow, that's pretty early.
That's kind of like when I'm getting ready to start the day, you know, I'm getting things prepped and, you know, you just feel good. Like, you always feel good when you wake up and then it's like downhill from there.
Yeah, that's why I feel like you should actually have that higher. Don't you get up really early and then just sit around and do nothing?
I do, and actually, we'll get to that in a couple of answers, I think.
I don't – that makes no sense why you get up 2 hours and just sit there and don't do anything. Give me your number three.
So my number three, I have like evening, but more specifically like between 5 and 6 because I'm getting out of work. I'm going home. I'm seeing the family, you know, like and 5 to 6 is, you know, it's like, oh, man, the day is kind of behind me. But now I get to have family time. That's an awesome time.
OK, so I want specifics. Are you going 5 o'clock? You going 5:30? You going 6 o'clock?
I will go 6 o'clock.
OK, I feel like that's a little bit too late. I'll get into that later. My number three is 12:30 a.m.
Okay.
I feel like that's a good – like if you're out, that's a good time. That's before everybody's too drunk. That's where everybody's right in that kind of nice drunkenness where they're either – like that's the good drunk, right? That's everybody's dancing. Everybody's taking shots. That's a good time. That's not 2 a.m. puking on the side of the street.
So I'll piggyback on that. I have 1:30 a.m. as my number two. Specifically because in most states, 2 o'clock is like, you know, when the bar starts shutting down. And 1:30 comes around and you're like, I'm really hungry. I'm going to go get some food.
See, I think that's too late, man. I think 12:30 is the better time. I think 12:30 is prime fun time, really.
It is for many things. You never know. You never know what the night's going to throw at you.
It's true. Usually it's at home on a solo joyride.
Which side of the plate do you hit from? Both sides.
I was talking about playing Mario Kart.
Oh, I was talking about playing baseball. No big deal.
Okay. What the hell number are we on?
We're on number two. You're number two.
Oh, my number two is – I don't really like my number two, but I put 5 p.m. because that's kind of the end of the day. Really, 5 p.m. on Friday is what I'm thinking about. But generally, 5 p.m. end of that workday is kind of – it's a good time.
Yeah, but I – but for most of us, like 5 p.m., like our workday is over, but then, right, like that's when life really kicks in because you're with your family or whatever, you're with whoever. Like I think it's more like just celebrating that like, hey, work's over.
Yeah, pretty much. It's amazing that we basically spend 8 hours a day not liking our lives.
I mean, it's really longer than that if you think about it.
Yeah, you could have an hour on the front end, an hour on the back end. So basically we spend 10 hours of our day. Of normally a 16 to 17 hour waking day, we spend more than half of it not liking it, which is incredibly depressing, and we should probably just move on. Yeah, we got to start living for the moment more. Okay, anyway, we should just move on. What's your number? Are you on number one?
Yeah, so my number one, you kind of hit on it earlier, is the super early morning, which is like 4 a.m. to like 5 a.m. for me.
What the hell are you thinking?
That's when, you know, that's when I get up usually and, you know, I'm just like getting the day ready. Like I said, 6 a.m. earlier is like when I start to do stuff, like as you were making fun of me earlier and as I've talked about, like those 2 hours or an hour and a half, whatever it is like, that's my time. Like, that's just my time. No one bothers me. Family's, you know, doing what they need to do, like, that's just my time.
I don't understand, though, why you don't do that at night and then sleep in a little bit later.
Because I'd rather go to bed early and get up early than go to bed late and get up late, if that makes sense. I mean,
that makes sense.
Either is fine. I would just rather rise early than, you know, stay in bed.
I feel like I agree with your sentiments. Like, I like the hope of a new day. That's why I'm going to go with 7 a.m. 7 a.m. is my probably favorite time of the day.
Like, that's for most people, right? I mean, I don't know what the generic, like, wake-up time would be, but I feel like 7 a.m. is a good roundabout time, like, for people to start their day and things like that.
Okay, what's your honorable mention?
As I said earlier, I didn't really have any midday. I mean, I had like 6 p.m., but I put 1:30 because at 1:30, most of us are already well into like the second half of our workday if you work like day side shifts.
See, I could understand a 2:30 on that, but 1:30 to me is like, oh, shit. I still got 3.5 hours left of this.
Yeah, I don't know. I think like during your day, what are the hours when like the clock just doesn't move? Like when you look at the clock and you're like, man, it's still, you know, whatever, it's still noon. Like,
I would say 2 hours into the shift, between 2 and 4 hours into the shift is when that clock just doesn't move at all. And then the last hour of your shift is when that clock doesn't move at all.
My job's kind of reverse. Like, it's usually super busy. There's only like maybe an hour, and it's from like noon to one where you're like, well, we're kind of getting through the day fast, but, and then next thing you know, it's, you know, 5 o'clock and you're ready to go home.
Yeah, I feel like that day will, for me, I'm in at 7:30, and from about 9:30 to 11:30, that fucker's just ticking. Like, I can count the seconds in my head, and then it's over right after that. My only honorable mention, I guess, would be like 2:30. I don't mind a 9 p.m. I'm okay with a 9 p.m., but other than that, I mean, basically, between 10 and 3 to me is kind of worthless. Nothing. That's just meeting. That's like meeting time. Like, ugh.
I have on here 10:30 at night. If I do stay up, like, you know, 10:30 is just one of those times at night where you're usually chilling, or by then you've had a few drinks in you and you're feeling pretty well.
Okay, that's going to go ahead and do it for this episode of the Profoundly Pointless Podcast. I want to thank you guys so much for joining us. If you get a chance, like, download, subscribe, share. We really appreciate it. It really helps us out. I've noticed that some people have been leaving more and more reviews, and some of them have been pretty funny. So definite kudos to there. We love hearing from you guys. We got our website, social media, all that kind of stuff. I think we've got some pretty good episodes coming up. I think that a lot, and some of them have turned out.